Hello, this is Jan Kane. Today I'll be reading to you from the Commercial News, dated primarily Sunday, January 19th. We might also pick up a few articles from Saturday, the 18th. Our first story, the headline is Funding the Future: County Schools Seek Support for Tax. The byline is Carol Ream. School districts around Vermilion County are seeking public support once again for a 1% countywide increase in the sales tax rate, 2 years after the same measure was voted down. The school boards of 10 Vermilion County school districts, not including Danville District 118, have voted to place the sales tax issue before Danville and Vermilion County voters in a referendum on the March 17th primary ballot. A law enacted in 2007 allows school districts representing 51% or more of a county's student population to seek approval to assess an Illinois County school facility tax of up to 1%. 56 of 102 counties in Illinois assess a county school facility tax, including Champaign, Edgar, and Douglas counties in East Central Illinois, according to the Illinois Association of Schools. In March 2018, the 1% county school facility tax garnered a narrow margin of support with Vermilion County voters, who cast 3,324 yes votes, or 50.21%, to 3,296 no votes, or 49.83%. Voters in the city of Danville, however, voted down the measure that would have increased Danville's sales tax rate to 10.25%. Danville voters cast 1,140 yes votes, or 38.68%, to 1,807 no votes. The total city and county votes on the sales tax issue was 4,464 yes to 5,103 no. Regional Superintendent Cheryl Riefsteck said, "It is not unusual for it not to pass on the first try. The first time it's on the ballot, people don't understand what the purpose of it is," she said of the tax. "It would bring property tax relief and a way to pay down bonds that were issued to maintain buildings." The law has been amended in the 2 years since the last time the sales tax issue came before Danville and Vermilion County voters. The only change is it now allows this tax money to be used for school security and mental health issues," she said. Riefsteck said she received paperwork last month from the last school board in Vermilion County, not including Danville District 118, to have voted on a resolution in support of bringing the county school facility tax issue before the voters. The school districts had until the beginning of January to vote on the resolution and submit the supporting documents to Riefsteck's office. Each school district sends paperwork to Riefsteck stating their school board passed the resolution, and then Riefsteck verifies that the majority of the enrolled students in the county are represented by the boards of all the schools that passed the resolution. All the districts filed their paperwork before Christmas and represent more than 50% of the total student population for Vermilion County, she said. Danville District 118 is the only one that didn't file. The other county school districts did not need Danville's support because District 118 does not serve the majority of the students in the county. Due to a decline in student enrollment in District 118 since 2014, only 42% of the total number of students in Vermilion County attends District 118. Riefsteck also certifies the wording of the referendum question and files it with the Vermilion County Clerk and the Danville Election Commission, so the county school facility tax question appears on the March 17th ballot. A simple majority vote is required for passage of the tax. If Danville and Vermilion County voters approve the sales tax hike in March, the new tax would begin to be collected July 1st. The Illinois Department of Revenue would direct the county school facility tax dollars, which would generate a total of $5.4 million annually, to the Vermilion County Regional Office of Education, where it would then be distributed to the local school districts on a per-pupil basis. Since the amount of money a school district would receive from the tax is based on the district's student enrollment, Danville District 118 would benefit the most by receiving about $2.27 million in new revenue each year. In Westville, the 1% sales tax would generate $600,000 in new revenue, or 11% of the total new sales tax collected for the district annually, Superintendent Seth Miller said. Miller said the district's current tax rate is 5.08 cents per $100 equalized assessed evaluation that it levies every year from property owners within Westville School District. 66 cents of that goes to pay for debt we've accrued to repair and maintain buildings, he said. If the sales tax was in place, there would be a 13% reduction in the property tax that the Westville School District collects, he said. Miller said the new revenue from the penny sales tax would allow the Westville School District to provide new service and improve facilities. State legislators expanded the uses of that tax so we could pay for school resource officers and mental health providers, he said. One of our priorities after property tax relief is contracting through the city for a full-time resource officer to be in our district all the time and paying for some long-range facilities improvements, Miller said. We also would expand our early childhood offerings and build an auditorium at the high school, he said. There are only two high schools in the county that have an auditorium. Our band kids play in the cafeteria or gym. Hoopston Superintendent Robert Richardson said, "Our board passed a resolution to put it to the voters, and now our goal is to educate the public." The 1% sales tax would generate $430,000 in new revenue annually for the Hoopston School District. "We would put in air conditioning at John Greer and Maple School," Richardson said of the extra revenue. "That is our priority, along with lessening the property tax burden." Installing air conditioning at the two elementary schools would improve the comfort level for students and teachers, he said. "We try to provide the best learning environment for our students, but we are teaching 21st century learning in early 20th century buildings," he said. Richardson said the district has a list of improvements it would like to make if extra money was available. "We have aging facilities we'd like to improve," he said. "I look at the nice schools like Tolono and think, why can't we have that for our kids?" In addition to air conditioning at John Greer and Maple Schools, the list includes upgrading and modernizing the HVAC systems, Hoopston Area Middle School and Hoopston Area High School, installing airtight and efficient windows and doors, installing efficiency lighting, installing video surveillance for student safety, and addressing aging facilities and building improvements. "One thing I love about this tax is the local control," Richardson said. "We've identified our priority list and how we would spend it. But we also would need to have conversations with our people and have some town hall meetings to find out what's important to them." Our next article is on the same topic, also by Carol Rehm, and the headline is "School Sales Tax Faces Opposition." Danville City and District 118 officials say they are reluctant to support a 1% increase in the countywide sales tax rate that would benefit cash-strapped school districts around Vermilion County. The 1% Illinois County School Facility Tax would increase Danville sales tax to 10.25% from 9.25%, making it the same amount as sales tax charged in the city of Chicago and several Cook County suburbs. By comparison, the sales tax rate in both Champaign and Urbana is 9%. Proponents of the county school facility tax say the idea behind raising the sales tax rate is that it's something everyone pays, including Vermilion County residents who don't own property and non-residents who visit or work in the county. If voters approve the sales tax increase in March, all goods and services that currently fall under the municipal and county sales tax base would start being charged at the higher sales tax rate effective July 1. Exceptions from the higher sales tax rate would include licensed and titled vehicles, boats and RVs, mobile homes, unprepared food, drugs, including vitamins and over-the-counter medicine, and farm equipment and parts. "I don't support this tax increase, and neither do any of my constituents that I've spoken with about the matter," Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said. This would tie us for the second highest sales tax in the state and hurt the revenue of every municipality in Vermilion County. School districts already receive a substantially disproportionate percentage, more than 50%, of property taxes levied and must be good stewards of what they are already given, Williams said. If they desire to extract more money from citizens, then their board should vote to raise property taxes in the districts where the construction improvements will be done instead of punishing all of the folks in Vermilion County, he said. District 118 Board President Bill Dobbles said the Danville District informally took a stand not to support it during a discussion at its August 21st school board meeting. We don't want to raise taxes, he said. Westville Superintendent Seth Miller said he wasn't surprised that District 118 was the only school board not to approve a resolution in support of bringing the county school facility tax issue before the voters. They're going to be silent because it would be a 10.25% sales tax rate in Danville, he said. I don't think it's going to get much traction in Danville, Miller said of the proposed 1% sales tax increase. It's controversial in the city, and it puts their school board in a tough position. Both Miller and Hoopston Superintendent Robert Richardson said the county school facility tax is a more equitable way to fund school district improvements and services. School safety and mental health services are major needs, Miller said. This is a way to meet some of those needs without the property owners footing the bill. Relying on property tax to pay for everything is going to be hard to sustain, he said. This sales tax is about finding a different way to fund things and making it more equitable. Richardson agreed. With this sales tax, we would have an alternate revenue stream. If we don't have that 1% tax, where are we going to get that money to repair the boiler or replace roofs, he said. We have a great group of countywide superintendents that just want what's best for our kids. Our next article is titled, Flight to Honor Women Veterans in October. The byline is Mary Wyckoff. The first honor flight for women veterans will be in October. Operation Her Story, like history, Her Story, is teaming up with Honor Flight Chicago and other groups for its first all-women veterans flight to Washington, D.C. from Chicago. The one-day trip will give veterans the chance to visit the war memorials built in their honor, including the Women in Military Service for America Memorial and the Vietnam Women's Memorial. Women who have served in any branch of the military during World War II, the Korean War, or the Vietnam War, or who served in the military between 1940 and 1975, is eligible. You do not need to be a combat veteran or have served overseas to be eligible. The flight can accommodate 125 veterans and their guardians. This is the first one in Illinois and the seventh for the United States. For more information or nomination forms, contact Ginny Narcetti at 740-228-1099 or email gnarsette@gmail.com. You can learn more at www.operationherstory.org. Other organizations involved are the Daughters of the American Revolution, Illinois Joining Forces, the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, and other organizations and contributors. Our next article is titled, Steel Magnolias Coming to the Lorraine. The byline is Carol Hicks. The Lorraine Theater Guild will present Steel Magnolias by Robert Harling at 7 p.m. Friday, January 24th and Saturday, January 25th and 3 p.m. on Sunday, January 26th in the Lorraine Theater at 324 East Main Street. Tickets are $10 in advance and can be purchased at Hoopston City Hall, DACC Campus Hoopston, Mr. B's Treasured Roots from a Foundation board member, at The Little Lorraine during movies and online at thelorrainetheater.com. Tickets can also be purchased at the door for $15. There is no reserved seating. The play is set in Truvy's Beauty Salon in Chinquapin, Louisiana, where ladies who are anybody come to have their hair done. It shows the bond this group of women share as they go through everyday life in a small southern town and the effects the loss of one of their group in childbirth has on each of them. Director Ashley Beauvoir works as an administrative coordinator for Nutrien Ag Solutions in Hoopston and is the drama sponsor at Hoopston Area High School, assistant show choir director, assistant marching band director, and serves on the board for ART. She has been involved in the Hoopston Area Music Boosters, serving as vice president for 3 years and 2 years as president. Beauvoir previously performed in The Sound of Music, The Taffetas, Nonsense, and I Remember Mama. Beauvoir said she looks forward to being a part of future productions at the Lorraine. Other members of the cast are Hoopston resident Jeanette André as Truvy. André's first debut was in Henny Penny in the first grade. Since her first taste of performing, she has been in Annie Get Your Gun, The Life and Death of Larry Benson, Annabelle Bloom, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, Pillow Talk, Oklahoma, Fiddler on the Roof, and in several of Tom Sweeney's plays at the Hoopston Public Library and St. Anthony's Church. She also was in Dracula last year at the Lorraine Theater, the Lorraine Guild's first stage presentation. Amy Buttram, who portrays Weezer, is an East Lynn resident. Buttram has not been on the stage since high school and is looking forward to a triumphant return to the stage. She works at Blue Cross Blue Shield, enjoys creating new recipes, being with friends and family, volunteering at Heart, and documenting her menagerie of cats. Judy Doden plays Clarie in her first major role as a performer. She did perform in Oklahoma and Fiddler on the Roof as part of the chorus and as the teacher in Grease. She lives in Hoopston with her husband Delmer. Holly Isaac as Shelby is the tragic life that is lost in childbirth during the presentation, which teaches her friends that mortality exists in everyone's life. She is a registered dietitian and lives in Milford. Isaac has played in Grease and The Wizard of Oz. Sarah Miller is Malin in the play. She lives in rural Hoopston with her husband Jack, works part-time at the Hoopston Public Library, and started acting in high school at Ranklin. Miller was in the first Lorraine Guild play of Dracula, in numerous plays by Tom Sweeney at the Hoopston Public Library, and several plays at the Cisna Park Country Theater and the Artistic Repertory Theater in Hoopston. Janelle Sechrist as Annelle is the Hoopston Public Library Children's Room Coordinator and is a Rossville resident. Sechrist also was in the first Lorraine Guild play of Dracula and has performed in many of Tom Sweeney's plays at the Hoopston Public Library. Lights and sound operator is Alex Humes, Vice President of the Save the Lorraine Foundation, and Emma Rails as the stage manager that complete the crew for Steel Magnolias. Coming events at the Little Lorraine Theater are music by Jerry Urich and Friends on Friday, February 14th, and the Elliot Ferguson Show on Saturday, February 22nd, both at 7 p.m. Seating is limited at both shows. Coming events at the Lorraine Theater are Doubles Trivia on February 15th, two persons teams compete instead of the normal five persons, Logan Kirby performs on March 14th, and the Seven Bridges Group, The Ultimate Eagles Experience. Tickets for these are now on sale online at thelorrainetheater.com. Next, we have an article entitled, Being Legal Doesn't Make It Good. It's written by Sherry Askren, a local columnist. She is president of the United Way of Danville. Good Sunday morning, everyone. How do you feel about the new Illinois law legalizing marijuana? There are pros and cons to it, as there are to any topic, and everyone has his or her own opinion. I hadn't given a lot of thought on it until I went to Walmart shopping this week. The smell of pot was everywhere, walking by people in the grocery aisles and really strong at the self-checkout lanes on the east end of the store. As a joke, I said I think I could have gotten high without even smoking it if I stayed in there much longer. But here's the reality of what I am saying. The strong aroma of marijuana means to me that they most likely smoked it shortly before they came into the store, possibly while driving to the store. It is against the law to smoke marijuana while driving, just as it is against the law to drink alcohol while driving. The possession of marijuana in a motor vehicle by the driver or passenger is not permitted unless it is in a sealed, odor-proof, child-resistant cannabis container. What else is not permitted, according to the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services? Using cannabis knowingly in close physical proximity to anyone under the age of 21 years of age who is not a registered medical cannabis patient. Smoking cannabis in any place where smoking is prohibited under the Smoke-Free Illinois Act. Facilitating the use of cannabis by any person who is not allowed to use cannabis. The only positive effect of smoking marijuana that I have found is the reduction of chronic pain, and it cures a type of epilepsy known as Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. To me, the negative effects outweigh the good, though. Smoking marijuana causes the heart rate to increase by at least 20 beats per minute, and the risk of heart attacks is 4 times as high as for a person who doesn't smoke it. Marijuana causes a sting in the mouth and throat and often triggers coughing. Scientists found that people who smoke it regularly had respiratory problems. It also has 4 times the amount of tar and twice as many carcinogens than tobacco, therefore giving a greater risk to developing lung cancer. As for mothers who smoked marijuana during pregnancy, their babies were born with a delayed neurological development, causing them problems with memory and responding to visual stimuli. I will admit I was shocked to see the extremely long line of people waiting January 1 to purchase the product. Many of the dispensaries in Illinois ran out, and they and the state made more money in that one day than originally predicted. But just because the state of Illinois decided it was a good idea to legalize marijuana doesn't mean it's legal to smoke where you want, when you want. Just keep that in mind. Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Next, we'll turn to the obituaries. First is Sally Johnson of Westville, 102 years old, lived in Danville, formerly of Westville. Sally died at 5:11 a.m. Saturday, January 18th, at Garden View Manor Nursing Home in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street in Catlin. Kathy J. Lee. Kathy J. Lee, age 65, died at 7:53 p.m. Thursday, January 16th, at University of Chicago Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, in Catlin. Richard Philip Dick Layden, age 89, of Hoopston, Illinois, passed away at 9:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 14th, at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Living in Hoopston. Memorials may be made at St. Anthony Catholic Church, 423 South 3rd Street in Hoopston, or the Hoopston Area High School FFA Alumni Association. A visitation will be 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 19th at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston, with a rosary service at 445. The funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 20th, at St. Anthony Catholic Church, 423 South 3rd Street in Hoopston, with Father Patrick O'Neill and Father Tom Gibson officiating. Corinne Brumley Moore, age 90, of Danville, passed away at 3:10 a.m. January 15th, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. A celebration of life service will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, January 21st at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Pastor Dave Anderson will officiate. Burial will be in Mount Olive Cemetery in rural St. Joseph. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, January 21st at the funeral home. Dr. Kamal Z. Abusif. Dr. Kamal Z. Abusif, M.D., husband of beloved wife Margaret, dear father of John and Mary, passed away peacefully into the presence of Jesus Christ on January 2nd, 2020. His funeral service was conducted January 11th at Archangel Michael and St. Mercurius Coptic Orthodox Church in Redwood City, California. A remembrance mass will take place at St. Raymond's Church in Menlo Park, California on Saturday, January 18th. Contributions in his memory can be sent to Archangel Michael and St. Mercurius Coptic Orthodox Church, P.O. Box 7054, Redwood City, California, 94063. Jack Lee White. Jack White, age 77, of Seidel, Illinois, passed away at 11:50 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday, January 16th, at the Waters of Covington in Covington, Indiana. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 21st at Robeson Chapel, burial in Woodlawn Cemetery in Indianola with military honors by Catlin American Legion. Visitation is 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, January 20th, at the Robeson Chapel. Memorials may be made to the family. Dixie Hackler. Dixie Myers Hackler, age 80, of St. Joseph, passed away at 2:18 p.m. Friday, January 17th, at her home, with tears of sadness and joy. Services will be held Saturday, January 25th, at the St. Joseph United Methodist Church, St. Joseph. Visitation will be from 9:30 to noon, with the service and luncheon immediately following. A family graveside service will be held at a later time. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in Dixie's name can be made to the St. Joseph United Methodist Church. Augustine Lopez. Augustine Lopez, age 69, of Danville, passed away at 1 a.m. Wednesday, January 15th. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. Monday, January 20th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Father Loftus of Holy Family Catholic Church. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service. Burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Next, we'll turn to some community events. The first is an open house, Museum Plans event. The Vermilion County Museum Society will celebrate Lincoln's 211th birthday with an open house 1:30 to 4 p.m. Sunday, February 9th, in the museum at 116 North Gilbert Street in Danville. Judy K. Myers and Jonathan Myers, the Myers Group, Morgan Stanley, are sponsoring this event. Major media sponsor is the Commercial News. Lincoln birthday cards, created by children in the county and Danville schools, will be on display after having been judged by members of the Danville Art League. Parking is available in the museum parking lot, First Midwest Bank lot, and the north end of the Big Lots parking lot. For information, call the museum. This has been Jan Kane reading to you from the Commercial News, dated Sunday, January 19th. I hope you have a great day.